FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good afternoon. This is the FNR News Hour on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. And as always, you're with Louise Taffer. And we are 28 days away from the FIFA World Cup, of course. Very, very exciting time ahead. And the lines are open if you want to join in on the conversation. That number is 03 99 44 99 99, or you can send me a message on 04 28 933 345, or you can tweet to me at FNR_radio. We are listening to the daily FNR News Hour, and Antoine Griezmann has led Atletico Madrid to Europa League glory after his double played a major part in their 3-0 success over Marseille, and it's Atletico Madrid's third Europa League in 9 years. Uncapped 19-year-old Liverpool defender Trent Alexander-Arnold wasn't left off Gareth Southgate's shopping list and 23-man England squad for Russia. Southgate said, "It is a young group, but with some really important senior players, so I feel the balance of the squad is good and something we can certainly be excited about." Well, Tottenham's duo Harry Kane and Dele Alli were among Manchester United's Jesse Lingard, Marcus Rashford, Ashley Young, and Manchester City's Raheem Sterling, John Stones and Kyle Walker, to name a few. Now, the squad will congregate for England's key friendlies against Nigeria and Costa Rica ahead of their World Cup opener on June 18th, which is against Tunisia. I haven't had to report something like this for a few weeks now, but more managers have departed overnight in the English Premier League. David Moyes parted ways with West Ham following his short-term contract coming to an end, and his brief tenure from taking over from Slaven Bilic was somewhat of a success, because the Hammers finished 13th on 9 points. 9 points ahead of Swansea. Former Manchester City boss Manuel Pellegrini is reportedly one of the names in the frame for the job. While Sam Allardyce, Everton's owners weren't happy with the back end of the season, and despite Allardyce guiding the Toffees away from the relegation zone to a mid-table finish, he was shown the exit less than 6 months after being appointed. Now, Everton's club director said that we have made the decision that as part of our longer-term plan, we will be appointing a new manager this summer. The Westfield Matildas will be seeking to defend their Tournament of Nations crown in July and August this year, when the second edition of the four-team tournament is held in America. More on those match dates, locations and kickoff times for this year's competition. Argentina legend Diego Maradona has signed a 3-year contract to join top-flight Belarus club Dynamo Brest as chairman. A former World Cup winner, recognised as one of the all-time greats, will oversee the strategic development of the club when he overtakes following the completion of the World Cup in Russia. In the A-League, 20-year-old striker Nicholas D'Agostino and Socceroo Brett Holman are the latest pair to confirm their futures at Brisbane Roar Football Club. The duo join a long list of players who have signed extensions to remain in Roar Orange for the next A-League season. Brett Holman has made 38 appearances in the last two seasons since joining the club ahead of the 2016-17 campaign, and has found the back of the net on 10 occasions. While D'Agostino has made his debut in, I think it was 2015-16, and he's pretty keen to add to his current tally of 2 A-League goals. Finally, in Western Australia, Tony Popovich has made a firm statement in his first press conference as Perth Glory head coach, saying, "This is about building a team and club that can be successful over a long period of time." And Popovich's first game in charge will be the preseason friendly in July at the new Optus Stadium against English giants Chelsea. Well, those are the headlines. And in latest football action, the Europa League final took place in Lyon, and it was Atletico Madrid who claimed the honours, defeating Marseille 3-0 with the help of Griezmann's double. It's the third time this decade that Atletico have won the Europa League final.
A Here's Griezmann. Atleti in front, and in front in a flash. Well done by Griezmann. And he's looking for the return. It is a wonderful finish. And it's a second for Antoine Griezmann. Majestic. Diego Costa on the move. With the strength to pull away from Rami, who's been able to get back into position. Koke. That's the finish. It's over now. And it's Gabby who gets the goal.
Well, after the match, we heard some reaction from Atletico's goalkeeper, Jan Oblak. And he said Griezmann is one of the best strikers in the world and he performs the same every day in training.
Yeah, of course, it's much better than first two times. But that's football. I'm happy. Tonight I'm happy. Last two times I was sad. But that's life. That's football. You need to keep working. You need to keep the head up and waiting for another opportunity. Luckily, tonight was the night we won, and I hope it's first of many.
What happens inside yourself when you're standing in front of your great fans and celebrating with them?
Oh, of course, we are enjoying. We are enjoying the moment with our fans because they deserve that. So we are all happy all together, and we're going to celebrate together.
You're the goalkeeper who plays the most time against Antoine Griezmann in training session. What makes him so special and better than any other strikers?
Oh, he's working. He's working really good. He's training really good, really hard. And now in the game, he's just showing that, what he's showing every day in the training. So he's one of the best strikers in the world. And I can be happy that he was with us tonight and not against me. So he helped us a lot.
You had magic 90 minutes. Tell us about the magic night that will happen tonight. What would you do and what are you going to celebrate and where?
I don't know yet. We didn't speak yet, but first we're going to travel back to Madrid and then we're going to see. But for sure, in these days, one day we're going to celebrate with the fans. That's for sure.
That's Atletico's Jan Oblak. And like any game, there's always other narratives. And unfortunately, Marseille's captain, Dimitri Payet, was withdrawn from the game before halftime due to a hamstring injury.
He came into the game with a slight doubt about his fitness and that hamstring. Obviously, the hamstring's popped, but you can see how upset he is. And it's not just with leaving the Europa League final tonight. It might well be that his chances of the World Cup.
Yes, Dimitri Payet withdrawn from the game. It's yet to be confirmed whether he will be fit for the World Cup or not. Of course, he is crucial for France. And on that note, France will announce their 23-player squad tonight. Now, twice in 2 days, the conspiracy theories are back. This time it's for Payet. And the theories are saying that it's because he was injured because he touched the Europa League trophy on the way out. And apparently that's a big no-no. Adriano Del Monte explained some other stories in the past where things have gone horribly wrong when players and coaches have touched the trophy before a game.
It's like the same with Dimitri Payet. He was injured during the Marseille Atletico final. There are Twitterati conspiracists out there amongst us. We're not a part of this, but unfortunately there are some that say because he touched the trophy prior to actually walking onto the field, he was injured. He now risks actually going to the World Cup because it's a hamstring. We'll have to wait and see what the medicos say in the morning European time because it could be up to 6 weeks and Didier Deschamps may not pick him. So, and he was a big blow. As soon as he came off, that's when the momentum change. Other than obviously Atleti having the lead, they actually did start to run out of legs, Marseille.
Simeone certainly had some success in his time, but perhaps in this edition and this trophy that he's won with the Europa League, perhaps he has to thank Dimitri Payet for his role in it. Of course, the conspiracy theorists out there on Twitter and in the social world suggesting that, you're right, because he touched the trophy before they had won it, before the result was decided, it worked against him. And he was withdrawn in the first half, midway through, with a hamstring injury, now risks missing the World Cup. As soon as I read that and as soon as I saw that take place, I cast my mind back to a few other famous incidents. Again, this theory of not touching the trophy. I believe it started in the NHL, in the hockey in the United States many, many years ago when players were lifting the Stanley Cup, the ice hockey trophy, once you've won everything. And I believe that's where it started. But I recall a famous football incident, which Liverpool fans will remember fondly. It was in Istanbul in 2005, the final between AC Milan and Liverpool. Now, at halftime, Milan led 3-0. Everyone knows that. At halftime, what most people don't know is that Gennaro Gattuso, the current coach of AC Milan, but former rock-solid, very tough midfielder back then, he actually kissed the trophy as they were walking off, suggesting, this is ours, guys, we've got it. And we all know what happened after that. Liverpool came out in the second half, levelled 3-3, won on penalties, the most famous Champions League final win in history. So perhaps Simeone with Dimitri Payet to thank for this piece of silver and success for Atletico Madrid.
Well, to all players and coaches, do not touch the trophy before the match is won. Now, with Atleti winning, here's how it impacts the draw for the revamped UEFA Champions League next season.
What does this mean with regards to Atleti winning the Europa League, with regards to Marseille not winning the Europa League? What does this mean for the Champions League next season? So what this means is, as Europa League winners, due to the revamped format of the UEFA Champions League, the Europa League winners directly go into the UEFA Champions League and directly go into the UEFA Champions League as a pot one side. So what a pot one side means, for those if you're not aware, is that in the draw, they will be in pot one alongside the respective champions of all the top domestic competitions. So we know who they are: Manchester City, Juventus, Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, etc. So Atleti obviously finished second in Spain this season. They would have been in the Champions League anyway, but they are guaranteed now to be a pot one side, which means they will avoid playing one of those sides I just mentioned in the group stage. Huge win for Atletico.
Big bonus. Big bonus.
Massive bonus. What this means for Marseille, though, is that Marseille, due to the fact that the French Ligue 1 are the fifth-ranked European League, they only have 3 places in the Europa League, so in the Champions League, rather. So what this means is that Marseille, Lyon and Monaco, now confirmed only 2 of them will be in the Champions League next season, and currently Marseille very likely to be the one to miss out of those 3. So that could be a very costly defeat for Marseille financially. Obviously, they want to be playing Champions League football, may miss out altogether now, but there is still 1 round of football to go. It could be the most costly defeat.
FNR's own Euro team Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea. Well, before I go to the break, in Matilda's news, Alan Stasic's team will be seeking to defend their Tournament of Nations crown in July after they lifted the silverware in the inaugural tournament last year. US Soccer have confirmed the match dates, locations and kickoff times, which will include the same nations as 2017. The Matildas will open their campaign against Brazil on Friday the 27th of July, now that's Australian time, at Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City. Australia will then head to Connecticut to meet the United States at Pratt & Whitney Stadium on Monday the 30th of July. That's at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Before the team round out their campaign against Japan at Toyota Park in Illinois on Friday the 3rd of August. All 3 of the Westfield Matildas matches at the 2018 Tournament of Nations will be broadcast live on Fox Sports. Now, in terms of the competition format, the winner of the tournament will be based on a total of points, 3 for a win, 1 for a draw, as usual, with the first tiebreaker being overall goal difference, followed by most total tournament goals scored. Well, some facts. Currently, 10 Australian players, 7 Brazilians and 4 Japanese players are in the NWSL. And so far, Brazil, Australia and Japan have all confirmed their FIFA Women's World Cup spots for 2019, with the US the only exception. They will be hoping to do the same when they host the CONCACAF Women's Championship in October later this year. Well, this is the FNR News Hour on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. On the other side of this break, we talk A-League expansion.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal! Cahill, it's his day! Now, can't spell it, Ronaldo! You just cannot write
FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is the FNR News Hour, and good afternoon to wherever you're tuning in from. In Socceroos team news, Sydney FC's Josh Brillante, who received his call-up by Bert van Marwijk, praised his teammate, Tim Cahill, and hopes he's still playing competitive football as well by that age.
The age he is and the way he's still going is phenomenal. I wish and I hope that when I get to the age I can still be doing what he's doing, so I think he'll always be ready to go. He's got that presence in the team. I know a lot of defenders will be scared of him when if he plays or if he comes on the pitch, and he's always scoring goals, so that's exactly what you want in your team.
With thanks to Fox Sports, that's Josh Brillante. Well, yesterday we heard that Sydney FC's assistant coach, Steve Corica, had been appointed head coach of the Sky Blues to succeed Graham Arnold, who will take up his role after Bert van Marwijk's short-term World Cup tenure as Socceroos boss. Former Manchester United goalkeeper and Fox Sports analyst Mark Bosnich said it won't be an easy job for Steve to undertake.
It does. Look, regardless of who you appoint, whether you appoint Carlo Ancelotti or whether you appoint Stephen Corica, it will come down to results. Mm. You know, he will live and die by his results. That's the job of a manager stroke head coach. But, and Jeremy Paul just made a really good point. He's right. I mean, he's been there, what, 5 years as a player? 8 years now.
Seven or eight years
in the backroom staff. And, you know, they need the continuity. It's a big couple seasons for Sydney FC. One of the main reasons is the fact that they won't be able to play at Allianz Stadium because it's been knocked down and rebuilt.
Yep.
They'll have to play at probably two, maybe three different home grounds. That's not easy. We saw what happened with the Wanderers of that. Also, coming off the back of what Graham Arnold's achieved with that team, it's going to be a massive job for him.
With thanks to Fox Sports, that's Mark Bosnich. And on that note, Steve Corica was on FNR, and I've got a bit of a teaser before that interview airs tonight between 6 and 7pm.
Yeah, quite some time, yeah, true. Yeah, I've been assistant coach pretty much since I retired for 8 years now, and obviously before that I've played at Sydney for 5 years, so I've been at the club 13 years, and now it's my time as head coach, and really looking forward to the challenge and getting together with the boys and the staff as well, which have been a great, you know, over the last couple of years. Well, I think so, yeah. I know, you know, I know the players, I know the staff, I know what the club expects, so I know the pressure that the club and the media put on Sydney, so it's nothing new to me. It's, you know, like I said, I've been here a long time. You know, we expect to win trophies at the club, and you know that's not, you know, it's not going to change. So yeah, I think it helps being at the club for so long. Yeah.
Sydney FC's newly appointed head coach Steve Corica, and he also commented on one of his players, Josh Brillante, who we only just heard from, and his call up into the Socceroos squad.
He's played there once or twice before with us, but before he came to the club, I do know he did play right back quite a bit, so he's definitely cut out for it. He's got the engines to go forward. He's good on the ball, so he would definitely fit in well, but I think that gives him something special as well, that he can play a couple of positions, either right back or in midfield, which is good when you're going maybe to a World Cup. So he's in the 26-man squad. You know, big congratulations to Joshy. We've congratulated him. He's done a fantastic job. But he's still got to get into you know, the 23-man squad, but I'm you know, right behind him, and, you know, he can play a couple of different positions, which will help him in that fact as well.
You're listening to the FNR News Hour, and Steve Corica's interview will be aired in full tonight at 6:40 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on FNR. Well, as we heard from former Manchester United goalkeeper and Fox Sports analyst Mark Bosnich, was also on FNR, but last night, and on the topic of expansion, now for all of those clubs who have put in an expression of interest application to the FFA, you might want to turn this up a little bit. He gave us an in-depth outline of what his club would look like if he owned one.
That club.
Well, first and foremost, it would be facilities. So if you're saying hypothetically, I would have a look at what ground we're at and try to work out approximately how many people we're going to get, and always look to, if those facilities are rented, for example, then you're going to have to look, okay, well, we're going to have to get a certain amount of people. So then I would structure it in terms of the team being good enough to get that many type of people. But eventually, I want my own ground, and then from there, that's where you play to the training facilities as well. Okay, you might not be able to afford to go into state of the art training facilities, but what you've got to work with. You've got to make that as comfortable as possible, because that's where the hard work goes into. That's where you water the tomatoes, so to speak, and to make sure they're as best as they possibly can be, and also put together, like I said, let's have an aim of about 5 years to move into something absolutely fantastic, you know, like, because training facilities are so important. Then you talk about appointing a manager, somebody that's young, that's hungry, and is understands where we are financially from the club's point of view. And then you look at, like I said, to look at other things. So you've got the manager of the football team. He'll have a secretary and assistant that he can rely on 100%, and so will I, that will be at the club 24/7. Other things, you know, other things that people don't realise, getting a kit man or kit lady, whatever you want, making sure that the players have a nice hot meal, you know, ready for them straight after training. All those things are vital ingredients to make sure that the club starts on the right note, and then you can improve all those things, and you improve them step by step according to the resources that you have.
You're listening to the FNR NewsHour, and Bosnić added it's a very simple game, and it's not hard to get the success of a club right.
Trust me, guys. It's not rocket science. A lot of people try to make out that it is rocket science. I don't know why they do that, but sometimes I feel like just shake them. So, look, listen, don't try to make it sound more difficult than it is. It's not. It's a very simple game, and things are done right. The most important thing is that you've got people in the right positions that are doing things right, and you know, and you pay them well, and you make sure they do things right. And if they don't, they're out. It's simple as that. It really, you know, you get things right on the pitch, and everything else will flow. It really will. And that goes in terms of the crowd, in terms of your merchandise, everything. What you do on that pitch, whether it be on a Saturday or on a Wednesday night, that dictates to how basically the club will be perceived, how people at individual at the club are seen. It's just, like I said to you, it's been forever. But right now, the Western Sydney Wanderers, and they did, I mean, you know, they're winning. The first game of that first season against Central Coast Mariners, they had 8,000 people. By the end of it, it was chockers. They got 18,000 members now. 3 years after inauguration, they went and won the Asian Champions League.
Yeah.
And that is key. That is everything. I don't care what anyone says. That is, like I said, you know, from that, then you can build all around. But that is the key. That's the centre of the octopus, if you like, to hold everything together.
That's former Manchester United goalkeeper and Fox Football's analyst Mark Bosnić on FNR. A lot of sense in what he's saying. Now, a reminder for all of those clubs looking to put in an expression of interest for one of the two A-League licences for 2019-2020. Applications are closing on the 24th of May at 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And I can also tell you the responses must not exceed 100 pages. Staying with A-League expansion, former Socceroo and decorated NSL goalkeeper Clint Bolton was named as one of the ambassadors for Team 11. Now, Team 11 revealed their stadium plans a few weeks ago, and it can fit about 12 to 15,000 fans, a lovely boutique venue. And Bolton was also on FNR, and he said that if given the green light, the stadium wouldn't be up and running by 2019.
I'm not across all the particulars, but from what I know, the stadium might be ready to go from that season that expansion happens. So there has to be contingency on where they play home games. And what I understand, and I'm not really across it to be honest, is that the big games, you know, the Melbourne games will be played at like an AAMI, but the rest of them will be played at just around the region, around this region and beyond, possibly even as far as Morwell and these sort of places that have hosted big games before. So, but don't take me as the guide as what's going to happen. So, but that's the way I understand it, just from afar.
Former Socceroo and Team 11 ambassador Clint Bolton. Now, as you're probably aware by now, on FNR, we're pretty lucky to get a lot of these amazing guests on our shows. And I must say, I was delighted and quite surprised to see Perth Glory's newly appointed CEO, Tony Pinata, walk into the studio last night when I was doing the news. Now, Tony too touched on the topic of expansion last night on Football Q&A with Dave Davutovic, and he says ideally the A-League should include 16 teams.
I think expansion is it's probably a few years it should have been done a few years ago, but it's needed, and we need to go from 10 to 12 to 14 to 16. I think 16 might be the optimal sort of number. I know, you know, look at all the amount of, you know, sort of investors who want to get into the game. Mm. You know, there's not like one or two. There's, you know, four in Sydney. There's, you know, Wollongong. There's Southwest. There's MacArthur. And there's...
Southern Expansion.
Southern Expansion. You know, there's just four there. You've got three in Victoria. You've got Team 11. You've got one out west. And you've got South Melbourne, Tasmania. You know, Brisbane. So there's a lot of, you know, people wanting to get involved in the game. So it's fantastic. And I know that the A-League is going to only expand by two, and the shortlist will come out in June with the preferred sort of bidders. And they're spending a lot of money doing all these bids at the moment. They're all getting their documents and their plans, etc. I just hope that, you know, the ones that don't miss out, that they can sort of still be there, and the FFA can still nurture them along, because ultimately we need to grow. Now, what cities need to, you know, be involved? I think given the population, et cetera, it'll be a Sydney, Melbourne. That's just my view, because it will need to sort of create those sort of, I suppose, environment. But, you know, saying that, you know, we've on our show, Football Bosses, we've spoken to Matt Winley from Team 11. We spoke to Robert Beltecki from Tasmania. And Tasmania Bin's got a great, I suppose, opportunity there. But it's really up to FFA and how they view things.
Tony Pinata saying 16 teams is the ideal number for the A-League. And currently there are many areas of the Australian game which need to be sorted. A second division and promotion and relegation have been on the agenda. And this is what Tony had to say.
I think it should be on the agenda. I think it should start the process, and I think, you know, there needs to be work done to develop the second division. We need to give these clubs such as Perth Italia, such as Adelaide City, the Strikers, South Melbourne, your Heidelbergs, your Melbourne Knights, some opportunity to make the next grade. Now, whether they make the next grade or not, well, that's up to them. And yes, it does cost a lot of money, but if these clubs can fund it and go to their communities, to their sponsors, and all it's going to do is grow the game, it's going to improve the players, and I think it'll work. I really do. Now, before you ask me about promotion relegation, that's something that has to come in. You need clubs, can't just sit there and sort of just, you know, lull year after year. There needs to be some pressure on them that if they don't get points, they're back in second division. So that's down the track, and it has to be thought properly, everyone involved, on how they do that. But I think it should happen.
You're listening to the FNR NewsHour, and that's Perth Glory CEO Tony Pinata on Football Q&A last night with Dave Davutovic. Well, the former Sydney FC CEO is known for his ability to attract some of the best marquees in the world, such as World Cup champion and Juventus legend Alessandro Del Piero. And he wore the sky blue from 2012 to 2014 and made 48 appearances, scoring 24 goals in that time frame. Now, Tony said that the marquee fund that the clubs have access to, which $3 million is available, won't be of any use.
When we signed Alessandro, you know, the Chinese market wasn't as it was. MLS wasn't paying the dollars they're paying. It's very, very difficult to get someone. I know they got this $3 million fund. It's not going to do anything, to be honest. Are they going to really give it to one club to go out and get a player? I think it's really up to the clubs to go out and then find the player, not FFA. I don't think FFA should be going out talking to players' agents and stuff like that. Let the clubs worry about it. And, you know, if they go out and find someone, then go to the FFA and say, look, we've signed in this player, we need, you know, some help. But I don't think at the moment, the way the game is, that you could go out and get a Fernando Torres, a Wayne Rooney, who are, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I mean,
Iniesta.
These players are getting massive money. You know, we looked at Andrea Pirlo when he came out from Juventus. We looked at closely, but, you know, he went to New York City for, I think it was like $7 million US net. Clubs can't afford it here.
Is that what it would have cost to get him here?
Yeah.
Perth Glory CEO Tony Pignata on Football Q&A. Well, this is the FNR News Hour on FNR Football Nation Radio. Let's take a break. The play of the day up next.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal! Cahill, it's his day!
I can't spell it, Ronaldo!
You just cannot write scripts like this.
FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to the FNR News Hour, and it's time for our play of the day, which is from the Euro Show, where Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea recapped the Europa League final action, and they also touched on the farewell of Barcelona star Andres Iniesta and Juventus legend Gianluigi Buffon, who has scheduled a press conference tonight. Which is widely expected that he will be retiring.
3 goals to Atleti, 2 to Antoine Griezmann, 3-0 is how it finishes. No surprise with the result. I did tip Atleti to win yesterday. Surprised that they have scored 3 because they haven't been that strong in attack recently in their fixtures, but defensively, that was the point of difference I mentioned yesterday, with exception to a very rare slip-up recently, but with the season all but over in La Liga, where Atleti lost at home, surprisingly, to Espanyol. Their defensive record, it speaks for itself. They're one of the best defensive sides in Europe. 4 clean sheets in their last 5 outings, with exception to that Espanyol clash, as I mentioned. And in the lead-up to that match at home, they had something like 11 or 12 straight clean sheets. Always difficult to break down. So for Marseille, failure to score an early goal was always going to be the issue. Atleti got it. Atleti win. And again, no French side, as I said yesterday, has ever won the UEFA Cup or UEFA Europa League, and that now continues.
Yeah, but there was a moment, and it was very early, and I think it was like the 3rd or the 4th minute. Germain, he was basically played through. All he had to do was just dink Oblak. That's all he had to do. He had already gotten past Garbi and Godin. Just needed to dink a ball over, and that would have been it. That would have been your 1-0. That would have been the early goal that we kept on saying yesterday that Marseille needed in order to actually establish some momentum going forward and to them to be able to sit back that little bit. They unfortunately weren't able to. And then when the exact opposite happened at the other end of the field, Griezmann, when he was able to capitalise on that little error that was made by Osignon, straight away into the back of the net. That was the difference.
That is the difference completely. Griezmann taking his chances. And look at the moments he did score. Marseille, of course, with a bit of pressure early on, they were impressive in the opening quarter of an hour. Did have a couple of opportunities, a couple of half chances in that period. Griezmann takes his chance. They go up 1-0. Second half, they're up 1-0. And 4 minutes in, it's his double. Game over there. 2-0. All too hard for Marseille to come back from against, as I said, one of, if not the best defensive side in all of Europe. And they've been that way for a long time now. Very strong. And credit to Diego Simeone, who, of course, was not on the sidelines for this game.
No,
but
he wasn't.
The work he has done over the years. Look, not the European trophy that they would have liked at the start of the season, and certainly not after they were drawn into that group with Chelsea and Roma. Certainly they were fancied to go through, if not top that group. But still, great reward for what has been another successful campaign under Simeone for Atletico Madrid. They'll be bigger and better for it next year. And that is now 3 UEFA Europa League crowns this decade. So the Spanish sides dominating the Europa League. Of course, Sevilla won 3 in a row. Atletico Madrid now with 3. Spanish football is at an all-time high. And if anyone tries to tell me otherwise that the Spanish league is not the pinnacle of world football at the moment,
They
have rocks in their heads. This is why we get a little frustrated sometimes when we hear particularly lovers of the English game suggest that their league is by far the best that there is. Well, it's absolutely not, because the Spanish competition at the moment has the best players on the planet, luring the best managers as well. Yes, the Premier League has some very, very good managers and probably even better at this point. But the fact is, the Spanish game is at a different level to all the other European leagues, all the other world football leagues. And should Real Madrid win next weekend, Real and Atleti will, of course, play in the UEFA Super Cup. Further proof that they're at a different level at this point in time.
And even under Simeone, he's won two Europa Leagues because he joined in 2012. He's won a Copa del Rey. He's won a La Liga title. He's won a UEFA Super League and a Spanish Super Cup. In all honesty, he doesn't have much more left other than to officially claim the Champions League with Atleti. So now the questions start to begin to be raised. Do you start to see Diego Simeone moved on? And unfortunately, they are going to be questions that will persist over the summer. And it's a sad little fact.
Nevertheless, it was a famous night for Atleti. And as I said, I think this is a tick in the box for them, a very successful season for them. And while it's not the piece of silverware they wanted, they would have loved the Champions League, it's a great reward again. And I believe, in answer to what you were saying earlier, I believe that Simeone will stay on because he probably will lose Griezmann this summer. It's been well documented. But he just finds a way to replicate, replace and maintain this super level of consistency, which I feel if he goes elsewhere at this point in time, the work that he's done has taken some time to get this squad to where he needs them to consistently. And I really feel he believes this squad can go all the way and win a UEFA Champions
League. That I absolutely agree with, because he does have enough talent, and you are right, he does unearth a lot more talent. I mean, he's brought back Diego Costa and he's brought him into a team that almost didn't need him but now a surplus with him. And even though they don't have that many resources left in terms of players and players that have left, you know, we've discussed it time and time again, they almost needed and wanted that little final piece just to hold off until the end of the summer. And I hope he does stay, I really do, but I'm sure some of those English clubs, I'm sure they might come knocking over the summer just to see where he's at.
And it's a huge weekend of European football because we are set to bid farewell to definitely one, very likely two, and a whole host of other superstars of this generation of football. A very emotional weekend awaits. We'll start in Barcelona, of course, because, Rick, for me, the greatest Spanish player in the history of the game. And they've had some significant players in history. They've had some very talented players, some very technical players, particularly in the modern era. But Andres Iniesta is set to bow out as a Barcelona player. We mentioned yesterday, set to move to either China or Japan, according to reports. But regardless of that, this weekend will be his final match for Barcelona against Real Sociedad. Very, very sad time away to the Nou Camp.
It is, and will be. So as a sign of remembrance, or as a commemoration, I guess you could call it, Barcelona have announced that they will turn all the numbers on the jerseys. They will turn them into an infinity sign. Obviously, Iniesta wears a number 8. They will be turned 90 degrees, and that will show the infinity sign, just to show their little love for the great man.
It will be a famous night, of course. We've seen greats bow out. Xavi, of course, recently with Barcelona. I can only imagine when Lionel Messi decides to call it a day. Of course, some other famous names around world football as well. But again, Iniesta, for all of his success, all of his accolades, I've never heard anyone say a bad word about the man ever. He would have to be one of the most respected figures in the game. And again, above all, one of the best players ever to play for Spain. Or certainly for me, I said on Twitter a couple of weeks ago that he, without doubt, is the best player to never win a Ballon d'Or. And you just get the feeling that if Ronaldo and Messi, not that they haven't deserved every Ballon d'Or, but it's getting to a point now, they'll be dethroned eventually, but it's getting to a point now where, because they have maintained this level, it's just a race in two every single time. You get the feeling that if one of them didn't exist, obviously it's a silly thing to say, but you know what I mean, Iniesta could very well have 1, 2, 3, 4 in his own right. He is that good. And he has been a finalist in those awards in the past, but obviously not what he's interested in. He's won everything there is to win at club, at international level, part of that golden Spanish era. And it's going to be a big loss for both club and country and Spanish football in general, because he'll be very hard to replace.
Well, if you take out Messi and Ronaldo from the 9 that they've won, which is the last 9 of them, he would have won at least 2, because he's made the final twice. So he's been the third person, the first runner-up, whatever you want to call it. He's been there on the dais, and unfortunately it hasn't gone his way. But his one moment that I think will always live in the hearts and the minds of every single person, and I think it's a 2010 goal that he scored in the World Cup final.
Of course.
You can't go past that. When you score the winning goal of a World Cup, How do you beat that?
No,
you can't.
That would certainly be. And I've seen him speak about that in interviews recently, and certainly that's a high point of his career, despite all of the accolades he has achieved. And he will very well be on the plane with Spain to Russia once again. So a beautiful way for Iniesta to finish up. But, of course, his final Barcelona outing this weekend, the final match of the round in La Liga, as Barcelona, the champions, once again end the season. I think that's a nice mark of respect by La Liga as well. They've put that Barca Sociedad fixture as the final fixture of the round, the final fixture of the season, the Sunday evening fixture there, just to ensure that Iniesta really gets the send-off that he deserves. So Barca take on Real Sociedad. The match, with exception to Iniesta, means absolutely nothing. All the better, because it'll be more focused on Iniesta. I'm sure he'll be substituted in the second half and be given a rousing reception from his beloved Barcelona fans. With exception to that one defeat last weekend against Levante, a flawless season by Barcelona, and deservedly champions and kings of Spain once again. Just a class above, particularly early on, where Real Madrid were significantly struggling. And the fact that they will win the title by 15 or so points, that is a really dominant campaign. That is 15 or so points over Real. They currently lead Atleti by 12. So congratulations to Barcelona. All the best, Andres Iniesta. And that is that for another season of the Spanish top flight. Now, I mentioned that there are a couple of other stars bidding farewell this weekend. Well, when we talk Andres Iniesta and his greatness, this man is certainly someone who needs no introduction, and certainly at that same level, Gianluigi Buffon. Now, the Juventus goalkeeper, the Juventus captain, the now former Italy national team captain, a press conference has been arranged for 11:30 a.m. Central European time today. Now, if you're in Australia on the East Coast, that is 7:30 p.m. local time, set to be streamed live on the Juventus website. And if it goes according to plan, Rick, there will not be a dry eye in the house, in the world. There, no one who will be tuned into this won't be emotional, because it is expected, it is anticipated, that Gianluigi Buffon will at the very least confirm that this weekend's clash with Verona will be his final for the Bianconeri. Whether or not he's retiring completely, I have my doubts, because I think they've left it far too late. Particularly, look at Iniesta. They've had a few weeks now to come to terms with it and take on board that this is it for his career. But very, very likely that Gianluigi Buffon will confirm that he will retire from football this weekend, and certainly from Juventus.
The only thing that I question is where he will go afterwards. I mean, there are always stories about Parma, his former club, you know, the club that brought him over into the Serie A, that built him up and made him into a household name ultimately before he moved to Juventus. But there seem to be a few jobs that are linking Buffon away from Juventus. So that's the other thing that arises my suspicion as to him actually retiring completely from the actual game itself. So where he goes, I mean, the Italian national team need a director of some description, or need a goalkeeping coach at the same time. So there is a nice big opening there for the 40-year-old.
Of course, there still is the potential opportunity that he may commit to one more season. That has not been ruled out. Although, given, and I mentioned this yesterday, given what I've heard from people close to him, Pavel Nedved, of course, the director at Juve, former teammate, said that without Gigi, it'll obviously be difficult. We arrived together in 2001. He's a legend in world football. If he does decide to retire, it would be a big loss. These comments are making me feel like it's already confirmed that he will retire. And his sister came out and spoke regarding the announcement, whatever it will be. He said, "We were all at sea when we learned about this coming about. We're not..." So for me, he's certainly going to leave Juventus. She actually spoke about the Juventus relegation over a decade ago, when they went down to Serie B for the Calciopoli scandal, and actually said that we were all at sea then at that point as well. And I looked at Gigi and said, "Where are you going next year?" And she admitted, he actually shocked me by saying, I'm staying at Juventus, not thinking about going anywhere else. And his devotion and affection for this club and this place, really, this has to be the end. The one-year extension, I don't think, will be an option that he will entertain. And, of course, I mentioned Nedved earlier, but Buffon, along with Nedved, Del Piero, Trezeguet, Mauro Camoranesi and a young Giorgio Chiellini. They were the only top-line players to actually remain with Juve in that Serie B demotion back then. So Buffon, that'll be the end of an era there. Chiellini, of course, still playing, but he was a lot younger at the time. So Buffon, along with those other four superstars in their own right at that period, really, this is a significant end of an era for Juventus and Italian football.
If Del Piero is in Turin at the moment, in which he is, he's flown in from America, I think it signals what we all think it means.
Yeah, I agree. And it's very, very sad because Buffon did admit recently, you know, it would have been very special to play at 6 World Cups. He's, of course, won a World Cup. He's won everything there is to win, with exception to that Champions League, which somehow keeps avoiding him. But he's won everything there is to win in football. And obviously, he really would have loved to have ended his career at the World Cup. And I have no doubt that if Italy were in the World Cup now, this press conference 200% would be retiring from club football effective immediately, no doubt. But the fact that that is still there, I just sense that there's something he still wants to fill that hole with, and I don't think that he's ready now to give it away. So I wouldn't be surprised if he says he is playing on for one more season, whether at Juve or at Parma or somewhere else, but I'm not sure. I'm just saddened by the fact that he's going to end not in the way that he would have liked. But, of course, a wonderful career coming to an end. We'll know in a few hours' time whether it's come to an end. But regardless, Juve to take on Verona in the final match this season at home this weekend. A nice way for them to celebrate, of course, their seventh straight Scudetto. And while it will all be about Buffon and will be a wonderful way for him to finish at Juventus, celebrating the title and lifting a piece of silverware once again in the Juventus Stadium, it is all about that. What a season by Juventus to win the Scudetto against the gallant Napoli outfit. A remarkable achievement, and I think they will celebrate and celebrate for a long time because they've really earned this one.
You just wonder when Allegri will actually substitute Buffon off and Szczesny on. Now, he did this with Del Piero all those years ago when he was retiring. Mm-hmm. You just have to wonder when that moment will happen. And you are right. Juventus, well, yeah, we've said it time and time again, their squad depth has led them to this moment, I guess, and now it's time to celebrate.
You're listening to the FNR NewsHour, and that was the play of the day from the Euro Show, where Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea recapped the Europa League final action and touched on some farewells. Barcelona star Andres Iniesta and potentially Juventus legend Gianluigi Buffon. We've been listening to the FNR NewsHour. Stick around because Next Gen is coming up and I'll be chatting to Dr. Ron Smith.
FNR News with George Danikian and Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.